Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home, the good old Brooklyn Bridge.
Hi, this is Howe's New York with Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe, and tonight is our monthly recap episode where we look back at the hottest news stories in a very hot August in Brooklyn real estate. Here, as always, is our host, Robert Howe.
Well, welcome, everyone, to Howe's New York. I'm your host again, Robert Howe, and we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community, politics, and any hot topics of the day. We're broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyearbyen, Norway, to Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. I'm here with my executive producer, Jason Versace, of Rising Tide Marketing. And tonight, as Jason mentioned, we have our monthly recap, and he has scoured the Internet once again and all the various real estate periodicals and newspapers to find us the very best articles about what's happening in Brooklyn real estate, and tonight is no different. So why don't you start us off, Jason, tell us a little about what you found for the month of August.
Well, we're going to kick it off with a story that was in the Wall Street Journal, and it's something that we've touched on in the past. There was a little bit of a twist with this story. It deals with the development of office space in Brooklyn, and I know this has been a hot topic so far throughout 2016 with the ramping up of office space in downtown Brooklyn, and even creeping out a little further than that, and the influx of companies of all sizes, big and small, that are looking for office space in Brooklyn. This deals with in a particular 5,000 square foot space down in Williamsburg looks to be about a $400 million project. What I found interesting about this is that there were no
tenants lined up.
What a gamble.
Yeah.
Usually, these projects don't go up without having a prime tenant somewhere, someone to take 10 floors or a retailer or something. But that is interesting that they're building it on a build it and they will come attitude. So I think they're, the article does mention that they're making a big bet. And the bet is exactly that. You don't know what the outcome is. There is some risk involved. You do try to reduce your risk, as you say, by lining up big tenants in advance. But they feel a build it and they will come attitude.
I guess it does speak to the strength of the market and the demand. It's indicative of just how hot this area is for mining, for this type of inventory, and they touch on a lot of the industries that are moving into these spaces, and we've noted them on prior shows, the technology industries, the media, creative industries, and also more recently we've seen healthcare is another big industry that is targeting this sector of Brooklyn for a footprint. So it's interesting to note the diverse nature of the businesses that are coming. It's not just for industrial use as that area was famous for during the war years and afterwards, but these spaces are not just for, screen printing anymore.
Well, I guess a couple things factors are at work here. One is that, just like any other business that scouts an area, I guess this developer scouted the area, and, some scouts might say, are there enough banks? Are there enough supermarkets? Is there enough clothing retail? Well, this developer scouted and came up with the idea that there's probably not enough office, work there. Saw all the people jumping on the train, the L train, which may go out of service for a year. Saw all these people jumping on their bicycles and riding to downtown Brooklyn. And probably the light bulb went off, and they said, well, why do these people have to commute out of this beautiful, hip neighborhood when if I build an office building, they can go to their jobs, within walking distance of their homes? And I know I did a little research myself on this article because I found it interesting, and there was an article back in 2015 where they were talking about this. And, they hope to have thousands of office workers and some very light manufacturing. They call it artisanal manufacturing workers. I'm not really sure what that means. But that's who they're looking to get. And, they are. The interesting thing is... this area, as you mentioned, is on zoned for manufacturing. So is the city going to go ahead and sort of depart or modify what manufacturing is or was in New York City? Are we sort of giving up on that heavier manufacturing type of thing, going for lighter manufacturing, Etsy style, people, social media people, people, who produce food. Is this what manufacturing in New York City, especially in a hot neighborhood like this, is this what it's going to look like going forward? You really can't imagine somebody putting up a heavy-duty factory in that area, one block away from $2 million condos. This type of project really assimilates itself a little better with what is already there, very expensive housing, very well-educated residents, very well-to-do residents, and whose focus is on things like office space, social media type of things, internet type of things, electronics, and maybe very light manufacturing. So this may be the new face of what manufacturing is in New York going forward.
There might be a redefining coming of what manufacturing is, and maybe this is kind of an evolution of that industrial area, and maybe almost like a renaissance in this industrial areas, what they're putting out, and in the sense that maybe it is a changing of the product, where maybe things used to be hard goods or machinery or widgets. Now it's going to be that artisanal Brooklyn-made stuff that maybe the places that were successful making pickles and the artisanal things that were made, candles and things in Williamsburg, who knows which businesses now might graduate and say, you know what, now we can take our production to another level because of, the space that might become available here, and who knows what might be going into that space to help certain businesses maybe grow up and not have to produce small batch quantities or even outsource their production or packaging to places outside of Brooklyn or even New York. Who knows how many of those businesses might become future Brooklyn breweries.
Right. You bring up the point that a lot of businesses now that are on a very small scale can graduate, to the next level without moving out of the city, or, as you point out, having their product produced out, them having a footprint in the city, but having the product produced maybe by another company under a license, in another area of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania.
The last thing I found most interesting about this was, we're talking about this space here that it's a $400 million project for half a million square feet of space, and they don't have anybody to put in it. And you'd think, wow, that's a pretty big gamble, and who knows if they'll ever fill it. But the article also does go on to mention that what's coming down the pipe, by 2020, there's scheduled to be another 5 million square feet of office space, put up in the next 3.5 years.
That is a lot, and great for the economy if that type of space can be used and utilized by new jobs that are created in the city. It remains to be seen, I guess, if there'll be a glut or that the city's workforce will grow into it.
Well, our next story is kind of I'm going to take this as a two-part story. It's two separate stories, 3 weeks apart in the same media outlet. It comes from AM New York, and the first story is from the beginning of August. It talks about Brooklyn real estate sales heating up as inventory falls, data shows. And it kind of just reiterates a topic that has been a monthly staple in our updates and our news stories. We've said it before. It seems like every month there is a plethora of stories that speak to the ramping up of prices, new records being set, the median prices continue to go up in Brooklyn. They kind of, they're catching up to Manhattan as Manhattan kind of tapers off a bit. And, Brooklyn has become the hot destination globally for people looking to buy. And this story does speak to that and talks of different areas and how and statistical increases. So this kind of didn't surprise me much when I saw this. It just seemed to be par for the course from what we've been talking about for quite some time on this topic.
Well, I think you're right. You know, when you first look at the two articles, you say, did I misread the headline? One is it's hot, and the other one is it's slowing down. But I think the common thread is inventory or lack thereof. And regardless of whether the inventory is further shrinking or not, I think it's small. To argue over, is it continuing to shrink? I don't know if that's a really useful argument to have. It's small to begin with. It's like a 100-pound person who says, I want to go to Weight Watchers to lose a couple pounds of fat. You know, you're skinny already. Is a couple pounds one way or the other going to make any difference? So the inventory is, tight, and that's what's keeping the Brooklyn market, moving forward. The other issue is how fast is it growing? One says it's heating up, and the other one says it's cooling down. But the common thread, once again, is it's increasing. And whether it's increasing really fast or moderate or a little bit, it's still continuing, to increase. That's what I got from these articles.
Yeah, and I do see more of that quote that we've seen in the past, and also in a contrarian way, where the article said, "Hey, if you're going to buy, you better buy now." And then halfway through the article, it says, "Well, if you didn't buy when you started this article, it's too late." And then when you get to the end of the article, it says, "You're better off renting." Oh, by the way, the renting also just went up while you're reading this article. So this also mentions somebody says you're better off renting. But the other article that we're referring to, also from AM New York, just this past week, where it says Manhattan Brooklyn real estate prices had smallest increase in 4 years. The same report says in a span of 3 weeks, the same report said, hey, you're too late. Brooklyn's too hot. And then the next report 3 weeks later, the prices had the smallest increase. Now, I guess it's all in the way maybe they figured out that they're not going to get much more attention as we've been talking about this story, and in a way it might be beating a dead horse, but it's really not, because we're seeing news being made. It's not just the same story over and over again. We're seeing increases in month to month and over the same period from a year ago. I guess it's how you couch the data. It's one that says the inventory is decreasing, and the other one is saying that it had the smallest increase in 4 years. That could be because the inventory has decreased. So if you have less inventory to buy, you're going to see a decrease. You're not going to see a surge. You might see a surge in prices because there may be fewer people bidding on fewer places, but it doesn't necessarily mean to me that the prices have leveled off or plateaued or even backtracked or less people are looking. The second article does touch on that. Buyers are waiting longer. They're waiting to see if prices come down. And I found another article that mentioned that it's not, the seller's market is over. Now it's great for buyers, which really kind of turned on a dime, because a month ago when we were talking about this, we were saying, that was not the case. So I guess it's all in how you kind of finesse the numbers and the headlines, because again, these media outlets can't put out the same story every week or every month and get people to still be interested in reading.
Yeah, I think these AM New York must have a stock of these two style of articles. One is at the beginning it's hot, at the end it's cool, and they just, you know, move the numbers around a little bit to, you know, it's their stock two articles that they run, you know, every month. But I think the fact remains is inventory is low, prices are increasing, maybe not rocketing as they, you know, as we remember, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, but they are on the increase. And it's funny that you mentioned about, you know, are buyers on the sideline waiting for prices to come down? Well, you know, the saying that, that horse has left the barn. I mean, and not only has the horse left the barn, but the barn has been demolished and the high rise has gone up in its place. So I don't think.
Yeah, all those old carriage houses have been built into swanky apartments.
Carriage houses now go for $2 million, right? And no horses live there. They're pulling people around Central Park right now. So I think this is a little bit of stock articles that, you know, maybe every real estate periodical pulls out, you know, once a month. The market's up, the market's down. You know, you should rent or you should buy, or are they staying on the sidelines? You know, and of course this article, you know, the later article, the August 28th article says there's a lot of prey out there right now for Brooklyn and Manhattan home hunters. And the earlier one says, want to live in Brooklyn? Good luck.
It's as if Siskel wrote the first one and Ebert wrote the second one.
Yes, yes. Someone's cooking the books over there. And but it does make for interesting conversation. The market is still hot. Inventory is low. And people are not waiting on the sidelines because these prices ain't coming down. This is not like you're living in Phoenix and hoping that the bust occurs and that $500,000 condo becomes $250,000. This ain't happening with Brooklyn or New York City property. It's not coming down to 50% of the value. It's coming down, if anything, 1%, which is not now at least, but in a going down 50%, and 1 or 2% is not going to cause people who are on the sidelines all of a sudden to jump in and say, whoopee, you know, I got a bargain. But it does make for interesting. I liken it also to those articles you always see. I always kid my wife about the articles on women's magazines where it says things like 10 different ways to lose 20 pounds in 2 days. And another one might say, how to lose all those wrinkles and whatnot. And but all those, it makes for good headlines, but there's a lot of fluff behind it, not too much, you know, firm facts.
Yeah, and I guess in the realm of real estate news, it's an attempt at maybe a sensationalist headline to maybe, you know, draw you in because everyone has seen how it's all been. Everything's coming up roses, and everything's great, and everything's on the rise. And oh, wait a minute! It's the smallest increase. But when you really look at even the article itself says that over the past month in 2015 versus 2016, the increase is still almost 5%. So we're not even talking about, like you said, that if it's a 1% decrease, it's not even that. We still see an uptick of nearly 5% from last year. This is just now saying that it's smaller than it's been, so who knows? In September, it could be the biggest increase that they've seen in years. So it's really, I guess you got to take it with a grain of salt and really just understand the information that you're reading because it's just now being twisted in different ways to kind of maybe grab your attention. And our last story is just an interesting piece. We occasionally reference the just how Brooklyn is such a cosmopolitan, continental setting, and it's so universal. The destination of Brooklyn, even if you've never been, who knows where you may be in what part of the world. If you just hear of Brooklyn, you've kind of got this mental image that in large part is thanks to Hollywood. And just the article from the New York Times kind of goes through and touches on a number of some iconic movies, maybe some more lesser-known movies, but just a slew of movies that have been set in Brooklyn and how the real estate of the area kind of has played a role. And I found it kind of interesting to see the variety of movies and themes, and but the locale has been the common denominator.
Yes, but I am disappointed that they don't have Saturday Night Fever in here, the iconic Brooklyn film that really gives some teeth and some bones to what Brooklyn was. And but be that as it may, will maybe in the next article they'll throw in Saturday Night Fever to that. But yeah, they do mention the portrayal of some of these movies set in, they refer to Williamsburg as sort of like a bohemian area, and that is really the case.
Well, I thought the most interesting tidbit in here was from the 1985 movie, The Year of the Dragon, where they needed a set created to kind of be a an iconic Brooklyn apartment, and the people, set up this apartment on the top of this building and kind of decked it all out to kind of look like it should represent Brooklyn. And lo and behold, that apartment that was born in 1985 in that movie went on to become the penthouse at the Clock Tower building that was up for sale for $25
million. who would have thought that? We did talk about that penthouse apartment with the clock in one wall. Very, very dramatic, apartment somehow melded into this is the Mickey Rourke movie, correct, set in Dumbo. And now it's, $25 million later.
you kind of wonder if those set designers thought to themselves, I should get a piece of that somehow, I should have even a small percentage. Well, I was most disappointed that my favorite Brooklyn movie was not included, which was Arsenic and Old Lace, with the classic line, "Are your people Brooklyn people?"
Oh. Brooklynites need not apply. Yes.
Well, that brings us to the end of our recap with some of the top stories that we've seen in August. The hottest news stories in what has been a very hot month. Once again, Bob, why don't you take us out?
Well, Jason, thank you. This concludes tonight's radio program, and thanks to Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show, and thanks to Jason Versace for researching all these hot articles on Brooklyn in what has been a very hot August 2016. This is How's New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I am your host, Robert Howe.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge.